paid non-attorney spokesperson. Janelle and Associates Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is responsible for the content of this ad.
Attention all active or retired military. If you are diagnosed with tinnitus or hearing loss after using yellow and black or yellow and olive dual-ended earplugs, you may be entitled to significant cash compensation. These earplugs permitted damaging sounds to enter the ear canal. If you served in the military and were later diagnosed with hearing loss or tinnitus, call 800-871-7344 right now to see if you qualify for significant cash compensation. The manufacturer knew of the defect but did not warn its customers. Complaints allege that the manufacturer manipulated test results to make it appear that the plugs met government standards. If you deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan anytime from 2003 through 2015 and are now suffering from diagnosed hearing loss or tinnitus, you may be entitled to significant cash compensation. Call 800-871-7344 right now. Hurry, time is limited. Call 800-871-7344 now to see if you qualify for cash compensation. Call 800-871-7344. That's 800-871-7344. 800-871-7344.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's Shake Them Ropes, the NXT and 205 Live edition. My name is Chris Novembrino. I am joined, as always, by Jeff Hawkins. Jeff Hawkins, what's on your mind tonight?
I'm going to do a quick plug for our Patreon here, patreon.com/shakethemropes. Chris and I, on Tuesday night, I believe it was.
Yes, it was.
Did a long hour and a half show about, or thereabouts, about an hour 20, actually. Covering Raw, SmackDown, AEW, Evolve, and Extreme Rules. If you want to hear hot takes from that,
well, you can't. Fairly tepid. You can't do that at this point, but you can definitely hear our takes on it.
Our takes,
and
on,
some
yeah.
might say they are very hot takes.
No, but we had a lot of opinions on the shows, I think just as a Cliff Notes version for those of you who are going to cheapskate it. Extreme Rules, good wrestling, but, you know, nothing to write home about. AEW, I went over my thoughts on that. Chris hadn't seen it. And I thought Evolve was the best show of the weekend, to be honest with you. And then we went through our Raw and SmackDown thoughts.
So if you want to hear what I thought...
Yeah, a buck.
For a buck. If you want to hear what I think about the Raw and SmackDowns that I'm watching with some frequency, I mean, come on, what a pitch. What a pitch. Now, Jeff, what else did you want to talk about here in the pre-show banter?
Chris, AEW has signed Tully Blanchard to a multi-show deal. I am all over this. He is going to be he was revealed on Being the Elite as the manager of one Sean Spears in his war against Cody Rhodes.
Okay, I like that.
The Rhodes Blanchard war is on. If he can be half the jerk he was in his youth, we will have somebody who can actually cut a heel promo out there. I don't know if I need to get him on the drugs again. I think that's a mean thing to say, but I'm willing to do it. No, I'm very excited about this. As longtime listeners of this show know, Tully Blanchard, my favorite wrestler of all time. Got to meet him in Dallas during WrestleMania weekend. Just socially, and that was the highlight of my wrestling fandom, I think. So I am very excited about this whole thing, and I'm hoping it grows from there. I'm hyped for that. A couple of cleanup notes. Braun Strowman re-ups for a 4-year deal. Not going anywhere. I assume there will be a world title reign in that 4 years. This thing is weird because I was having a discussion, and I think we've been in a holding pattern since between that WrestleMania in Palo Alto and the next year, and actually the year before and the next year, you know, where Lesnar beats The Undertaker, and the straight-ahead thing is you take the heat from that, from breaking the streak, and you put it on the guy. And then when Royal Rumble 2015, I think it is, happened in Philadelphia, the one where they really screwed up Daniel Bryan booking and the crowd turned on the match and Roman won, and I think The Rock came out to raise his hand and everybody was booing. I think we've been scared to crown a guy for a long time So then we end up going back to Brock and going, okay, who are we going to get to actually beat this guy? Because nobody's gone over him strong other than Goldberg, really.
Right.
Seth had to use a chair. You know, you get your roll-ups, you get your sneak pins. But nobody's really had the dominant, oh my God, he killed the beast type moment. And we've been playing footsie with this for 4 years now.
And I have to imagine that if you're the performer, Braun Strowman, you're thinking, well, Roman Reigns 4 years ago when I first signed up with this company, how long has Strowman been with the company? About 4 or 5 years?
I think maybe a little less than that. I'm thinking maybe 3, but you might be right.
But at that time, it looked like the rocket was on Roman Reigns and he was the new John Cena. With the current lay of the land as it is now in the middle of 2019, that's not so clear anymore. And there's still room for a guy like Braun Strowman, the performer, to run and advance his career. I think you're right about a world title run. I think that if he plays his cards right, Vince might like what he sees in Braun Strowman and want to make this guy not quite the face of the company at a John Cena level, but more of a face of this company.
He's not there yet. I think right now, and I've said this before, I think he's in the Andre the Giant role. He's the big guy that they bring out for spectacle. But you know how these people are with accents and stuff like that. I think the Southern accent is killing him. In terms of, we're going to put the rocket on him. Because I could see Vince going, I don't want a guy talking like that as the main guy.
But Braun and does like that screamy thing. It's actually very 1980s.
It is, but look, I mean, they've been this particular this long because they've been scared to put it on Roman because they're afraid of crowd blowback. Kevin Owens is never going to be the guy. That's why he's over on SmackDown in that main event feud. He's always going to be B+. Seth Rollins, it seems they have some doubts about him. That's all I'm saying. It seems they have some doubts about him.
Yes.
As not a top guy, because he is a top guy.
They value him, but they don't see him as
the mascot of the company.
Exactly. He's not the mascot of the company.
Hulk Hogan. He's not Hulk Hogan or Cena or Austin or Rock. And they are looking desperately for that guy.
For this generation's.
And the thing that they do is they go, what's a reason we can't have that guy be the guy? And if they find something, that's it. It's like killing the very good in search of perfection. And I think that's kind of what's been going on. To be honest with you, because it's like, oh, too short, too this, not attractive enough, whatever. You know, they don't play it by natural flow. They play it by what their standards are. And if you're found lacking in any way, you're in trouble. But
I'll go a little bit further on the Seth Rollins thing and say that he is a very, very talented performer, but a little generic looking in appearance and stuff. He doesn't have that star popping thing that The Rock had, that Steve Austin had, that Hulk Hogan had. It's a very distinctive look. Seth Rollins is a long guy with a mustache and, you know, some scruffy stuff on his chin. It just doesn't feel iconic.
It's amazing.
Iconic.
actually liked that ending too. No, actually somebody on the Figure Four board, noted that everybody, like in the, there's like four Jesuses on the roster. There's CrossFit Jesus,
Ali.
Guitar Jesus, Scottish Jesus, and Giant Jesus.
Oh, you
and
left one out. Ali. Ali's got to do with the Jesus thing now too.
Oh, is he? Yeah, he's got in terms of appearance.
Yeah, a little bit, long hair. Yeah. He looks enough like Seth Rollins at times.
But he's not on top of the card. He's not on top of the card on Raw.
Well, he at various times they've teased it.
Okay, fine.
He had the match against Seth Rollins. There was a little bit of like the Spider-Man meme where they're both pointing at each other. That's all I'm
saying.
Chris,
are you ready for Raw reunion?
Oh God, I'll tell you what. I was upset when they broke up Raw because I loved Raw's last album. But getting the band back together, it's great. It's been a while since Raw has been back on the air, so I can't wait.
This was an idea by the USA Network to help ratings, along with the 24/7 title. That was their idea. This is from USA and what they think is going to help, and not so certain. But at least in a lot of these,
this is a real who's that of the WWE roster.
It's one of my favorite roast jokes. I forget. Some people say this is a who's who. It's more like a who's that or a who's left. There are some different names, though. I mean, Sid has been advertised. I'm kind of interested on that. You know, the Jillian Halls, the Melinas, the Candace Michelles. They don't move my needle necessarily, but I mean, these things are never really great homages. This is more like old people doing cosplay in the hallway, and other people walk by and go, hey, you remember that guy? You know, it's almost like Easter eggs on parade.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we get a Sid and Braun Strowman moment that's kind of funny.
Jonathan Coachman's going to be there.
Can't wait.
I think Austin is the main draw, and he has a show on USA Network that's debuting in a couple weeks, so he's there really to plug that rather versus any, you know, versus any corporate love.
But he's not going to do a whole lot, so in order to make this Austin appearance feel like something more than a momentary appearance of Austin, they made the Raw reunion. That's what I think is going on here.
Well, he and Owens are going to stun guys. I think that's going to be it.
Yes.
We'll see what happens on Monday. Eric Bischoff reportedly has not really started, and he's not doing creative. He's just kind of being a manager, as we kind of thought he'd be. Paul Heyman, we'll see what his creative instincts are. Maybe Paul Heyman gets to script a lot of this. I don't think he's going to, because this feels like something that'll be very hyper-controlled by Vince in terms of how he wants to present old people. Or stars or whatever. But we'll see. So, where would you like to start this week, Chris? I will give you the
I feel like
controls.
You've been doing this a lot recently, but I'm going to take this opportunity and go with 205 Live. Because
agreed.
I want to talk about Chad Gable and Jack Gallagher.
It was the best match this week, I thought, on television.
Oh, it's so good.
in terms of the network stuff. Absolutely adored it. Loved this. Eventually, this crowd got into it. Gonna crowd shame just a tiny bit. In that they were very quiet and on their hands until the first major move kick out. That's something we need to work on in terms of conditioning. But yeah, no, this is hard hitting. This is great. Did the right guy win?
See, that's what's interesting. I think that this could have continued on. I think that you could have had another super competitive match that went even longer and had it go to some sort of double count out sort of thing, and the crowd would have been ready for a third match. This is clearly hot enough that people were biting. So I don't know that I would have had Gable go over Gallagher here. I don't know that I would have had either guy win here.
Yeah, I especially after calling the audible on the first match. This is the kind of match where you could do, because in WCW they did this quite well, I thought, between Benoit and Booker T. And, you know, even earlier than that, you had the Magnum TA, Nikita Koloff, best of seven for the U.S. title. This is a best
of
seven type story.
I always think of Malenko and Rey Mysterio. They did something
like
that.
Yeah, Malenko
and
Mysterio.
That was really good.
I also think of the Benoit, or not the Benoit, the Malenko Guerrero challenge, where they did three matches in three nights in ECW in 1995, I believe it was. So yeah, no, this is the type of thing where I think you could do something a little different here, and you could actually build over 4 or 5 weeks in terms of make it, you know, establish early on this is a best of blank series, as opposed to kind of what they did with the Lucha Dragons and the Bollywood Boys, where they just kept putting them together every week, every week, every week. You say, hey, this is best of seven. Chad Gable's up 1-0 with one draw, or the count out. You count that too. You know, you have the series, and it can be for the number one contendership, because that way you can build that too. But yeah, no, I thought Jack Gallagher killed himself in this match, and it was great.
Yeah, it was awesome. I don't know that I would have gone so far as to do the best of seven thing, because I do think, especially with where the audience is right now, they're so conditioned to not care about any match in this series except for the final match in the series. So,
well, we also don't know if Chad Gable is officially a part of the 205 right. roster or if it's like a guest starring role.
I would suspect he probably is because, you know, this Drew Gulak Chad Gable match seems like a very money match and the type of match that 205 Live would want to make eventually.
Well, I'm sure they want to make that. I still think Vince looks at Gable as a main roster guy, even though he doesn't use him.
So he looks at Gable as a main roster guy that he doesn't use.
Yeah, pretty much. But that doesn't mean you get to use him. See how that doesn't make any sense?
Yeah, no, it's paradoxical. I understand what you're saying.
No, but the visual of Gallagher after the match with that giant sore on his leg. His kind of like, his paleness really, I think, accentuated the damage, especially on his chest, too, and on his back. It looked like he went through a war. This was my kind of match, the kind of, you know, it was like smacking each other and working on body parts and suplexing guys.
Yeah, I like big suplexes. I'm a big suplexes guy, and I don't need like huge guys doing big suplexes, although I do enjoy Otis Dozovic if you go over to the Patreon side. I love Chad Gable and Jack Gallagher suplexing each other around. I think that stuff looks great. They look. Mm-hmm. I like when they take it to the outside. I like the outside brawling. Gallagher is so great because he can shift between so many different styles. He can do this amazing stuff. He could do the British comedy escapes style, and then he can go outside of the ring and he can brawl around and he flies around a little bit. He's got a lot of tricks in his bag.
Oh, he's great. I mean, this thing just made me so happy inside. I can't even explain it.
So let's talk about the rest of the show here. Akira sure. Tozawa versus Samir Singh was not necessarily super entertaining in the ring, but what I have grown a weekly deeper affection for is the way that Nigel and Aiden interact on the microphone, especially during the Bollywood Boy matches, because Nigel is so blatantly hypocritical in his enthusiasm yes. for the Bollywood Boys over the Lucha House Party. And I really dig it. He's so funny.
There was a moment, I forgot what it was during this show, where Aiden actually called him out on something and it flummoxed Nigel to the point of silence. And that's always my favorite moment in these commentaries where the heel is so great in his character, but he's gotten lost in his web of lies. And the other guy, the straight man, just kind of points out the simplest thing. And
Aiden's like, awesome. He's really,
yeah, he's
really
very good.
He's really good on NXT UK
grown
this
on
week.
Me.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
NXT UK this week, just real quickly to talk about the commentary stuff. I thought that he occupied the additional space required in a two-man booth really effectively while still staying in the babyface character, which is interesting and not like a take on that spot I've seen on commentary in a while, is because they always like the three-man booth now on Raw and SmackDown.
I'll ding him on something when we get to the NXT UK review, but overall, I find him... I like the fact that this commentary booth, in their roles, they aren't combative in their roles. Like, we know Nigel's a heel, and we know he's trolling Aiden, but it doesn't get snippy. Like
and
Corey
Aiden
Graves
doesn't
will sometimes.
Loathe Nigel
yes.
either, which I think is also important. They
you know, it,
rub
it's
each
why
other
like,
the wrong way, but they don't hate each other.
Like I like the Corey Byron dynamic, because Byron will not fight; he will just surrender, and then you can move on. If Byron fought back harder on Corey more often, it would be an unbearable thing. But it's like a good. Again, I'm sorry about this. I always use improv as a reference, but it's a good improv scene where it's like, okay, if a guy really wants to do something, don't fight him on it. Just let him do it and then go from there. And then you can move on in the scene. That's what Byron does so well.
But to contrast this, I really like this style more because there's just more
yes.
balance between
yes,
Nigel
no.
and Aiden. And it gives more space for both people on the microphone to give and take. Because to your point, I think you're right on the structure. I think you're totally nailing it. It's just Byron's a punching bag.
I was going to counterbalance it with Renee. Who will fight back on every little thing and just draw it out to the point of, no, just let the heel guy win on this and then pick your spot to go after him. That's my, I wasn't counterbalancing those two.
Yeah, and Corey does need to sell a little bit more for the face person. Like, he really never gives any back to Byron.
No.
Yeah.
And no, he's a guy who he's very smart, and he's so smart he will seem a little bit too powerful at times in terms of being that kind of presence on there. And I always have to win the argument as opposed to kind of show himself showing ass on that whole thing. But yeah, no,
Remember the I have it on good authority from backstage, that whole angle he was setting up for a while
yes.
that never paid off at all? That just gave him this
off.
Edge. It did?
Yeah, the Cass, that was the Cass Enzo thing, right?
Was it but he was doing that with other stuff too. It wasn't
okay.
Yeah, it wasn't just Cass Enzo. But
no, I think Corey's fine too.
I like him. I think he's good in the role. I prefer the Nigel and Aiden dynamic. That's all I was saying.
Someone's yelling, "Get back to 205 live!"
Fine,
okay,
fine. All right, weird voice. I will do it. Let's talk about Mike Kanellis.
Don't call me weird. I'm a fan. I'm trying to listen to your show.
I appreciate that, and I'm sorry. We got to continue on, though. I don't want to disappoint you. Mike Kanellis and Drake Maverick, we finally got to the crescendo in this Mike Kanellis versus Drake Maverick thing where it looks like Drake Maverick is going to have to step down as manager. But first, Mike got very under his skin and finally brought up Drake's wife. And Drake, who has been separated pretty well from the 24/7 stuff, the writers found a nice way to weave in that into this because it does have to be relevant in some way to this. But we kept it serious with serious Drake Maverick, who loses his bleep because this is the free side, and then attacks Mike Kanellis and has this look on his face of, oh my God, what have I done? I just screwed up this nice little office job that I had set up for myself. This is a really good position. What am I doing right now? I enjoyed all of this, and I thought both performers were really good in the scene.
I thought when he lost it, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I do. I'm a little... You know what was funny? If you watch it back, listen to the pop when he throws a drop kick, because most of the WWE audience doesn't know that Drake Maverick was a wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't know Rockstar Spud. They just know that he was a guy, this is an on-screen character. So when he threw a drop kick, you hear this whoa type of thing. I went,
they think about him in a way that is different from the way you and I think about him, in particular because we've watched so much of him on other products.
Well, we didn't give enough credit to the holding off on the reveal. And I think that's I kind of grinned a little when I heard that pop. I was like, man, I didn't give them enough credit for not giving Drake Maverick tough guy credibility or in-ring skill because he's been on TV for so long and kind of misused here and there. But that reveal that, oh, he knows how to handle himself is actually a great reveal, and the holding off on it that long makes it that much better. I thought that was, yeah, amazing. I'm going to bring up something. When we went to tape Tuesday night, you had 205 Live in the background, and I thought you were listening to a CM Punk promo because of the cadence and the voice, and that was Kanellis on the mic.
He's good. He's really good in this role.
But if you close your eyes, I didn't realize how much the cadence and stuff sounded like that either. I was like, okay, that's an interesting, yeah. But I think Kanellis, again, once he got rid of the Raw thing, on 205 Live, he's pretty darn good.
And he's got someone really strong to play off of. So I'm looking forward to this feud. I just hope these matches get over. But really, really good start to this. Or not good start, but good middle to this. So now I need to pick which is the weaker of the two shows this week.
Oh, actually, there was one more thing I wanted to bring up on 205 Live.
Sure.
The week two of the Humberto Carrillo.
Oh, yes, that's right. What did they add in here this week? I'm just trying to remember because I was watching it last night, as you just mentioned.
It's a little bit of the same as week one.
A little bit of his family, though. We had Angel Garza on screen there. Yeah, so that might come up in the future. I was just seeing if they were planting any seeds going forward. I like doing this when he's not on screen, though, and this is something that they should keep up with other wrestlers who they want to kind of get back into the rotation.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you have somebody who's off screen or out of a program for a while, introduce them in 2 weeks or so by doing good. I mean, there's a difference between a good video package and just a package that, you know, shows his name or says, hey, I'm coming back, or hey, here's my catchphrase, you know, get put a little depth in there and do that. But I'm liking this. I want to see what week three brings.
All right, so I'm going to go with NXT UK as the weaker of the two shows here, and we'll finish out with NXT US.
Sounds, yeah, that was kind of how I ranked them. It's not that they were bad shows.
No.
NXT UK to me this week was what we like to call on television a moving pieces show. You're moving pieces around the board to set up the big confrontations later, but you're not really going to have anything of interest happen. Although, I liked the main event on this show a lot.
Yes, and we will get to that. But first, we have to talk about Imperium, Fabian Arkner and Marcel Bartel defeating Saxon Huxley and Tyson T-Bone. I liked this in the sense that it's Imperium going after kind of the two guys on the roster who are least likely to quote-unquote think the mat is sacred. But other than that, this was just basically a squash match.
Yeah, the commentary and the thing did not mix, because they go, oh, they don't care about the rules or something, but the mat's sacred. I'm like, no, the mat's sacred because they like the rules and they want to be the most technically proficient. They just don't bother to follow rules occasionally. So I thought that was kind of a weird...
There's a real tension with the whole the mat is sacred tagline, which I like, and the way it interplays with the ring.
Yes.
Like, what they need is someone who really complains about the rules not being enforced. Almost like Bartel needs to constantly be saying, he needs to be holding the tag rope, he's not doing this, trying to call foul on every little thing.
Saxon Huxley is apparently doing something with a book.
Yeah, he's reading books now. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or keeping a journal.
No, he was reading.
I watched that. I went, well, what's the point of the... Okay, we're just going to have that as a prop.
And he just tosses it away. He doesn't even get all the way onto the ramp with the book.
I'm not the highest on Saxon Huxley, so the less said, the better for right now. I like T-Bone a lot. I think the team's okay, and I think they're slotted... They're kind of... They're a little bit below the hunt in the pecking order. And that's fine, and that's where they belong.
I like the finisher that Eichner and Bartel have settled in on, the powerbomb and European uppercut. That looks really good. And it's a good heel finisher. It's pretty, but it's not too flashy that you'd cheer for it. You know what I'm saying?
You thought the one where Eichner does the moonsault or whatever.
Too flashy.
Followed by too flashy.
Too flashy.
Team?
Yeah, I like this is a little more economized.
I like saving it. I like saving it for a big match.
Yes.
I like when you have a finisher that you don't do week to week, but you pull it out for the big matches. I like that idea.
Then we had Ginny with Jazzy Gabbert defeating Xia Brookside. So not a ton to the actual in-ring of this match, but this is telling, as you were saying, moving pieces here. So we begin with Ginny cutting that promo on Xia, saying that she can beat Xia all on her own. And then at the end of the match, Jazzy has to save the day for Ginny. It's a little bit unsolicited, but we're now slowly telling that story. I think you're right, Jeff. I think Jazzy is going to come out of this as the babyface when she finally disregards Ginny.
Yeah. Classic flaky heel, monster heel partnership. I like it. I did not like Aiden English bringing up Cersei Lannister and the Mountain from Game of Thrones.
My.
I think it's a little, it's a little too on the nose. It's a little too on the nose, and also cultural references tend to, ruin any. Well, never mind. That point's not very good because I always say that wrestling's a time capsule. I just thought he was hammering it a little hard.
Yeah, no, it doesn't bother me. But yes, I think he's hammering it a little hard. And if you don't watch Game of Thrones, which is some people, like, I didn't watch Game of Thrones. I got what he was getting at, but at a certain point, you're like, okay, all right. It would have been fine as a passing reference, like the way Morrow does it. You know,
passing reference and then describe what it means.
Yes.
I think that's what was needed, as opposed to just letting it sit there as if everybody knew
what it was.
Oh,
and then he starts telling Vic, that's the real problem here, is he starts telling Vic, oh, I'm hip and I watch Game of Thrones, which is just a tad bit tedious.
That was such a dad line. I'm hip. Yeah, okay.
All right.
Sure thing, Dad.
I'm with it. I'm cool.
This, I don't like distraction roll up finishes per se, unless it is a heel. And I like them judiciously used, but here it's fine because it sets up the sixth person that Sid Scala sets up later, where, Kaylee Ray, Jenny and Jazzy Gabber are going to face Toni Storm, Piper Niven, and Xia Brookside. I'm fine with this as a setup, and both angles kind of then coalesce into each other. I'm good with that.
Don't have a ton to say about Kenny Williams and Noam Dar. Toni Storm here. We have Toni Storm. She comes out, and she's talking about how she's friends with Kaylee Ray. This felt a little rushed. Like, there were a few beats here that were missed. I don't know that Toni Storm is friends with Kaylee Ray, so it feels like that's being ported onto this a bit hastily.
Yeah, it came off as, when you're saying you have this deep friendship, it comes off as a little shallow on Tony's end and nonchalant on Kaylee Ray's end.
Yes,
it didn't feel
Kaylee
like
Ray didn't
friends falling out.
This is more like the betrayed mentor, though, and I didn't feel that energy either. So
yeah,
I didn't feel
an emotional connection between the two, as if, you know, if Tony is really hurt by all this, she'd be saying, why are you doing this right now? Why are you're not like this? Why are you trying to tear me down
as I finally climb the mountain that you helped me get up? Why did you bring me over and help me stay at your apartment and all the things that she was rattling off, and now you're doing this to me? Like, this should be a lot more emotional.
Yeah, and then Kaylee Ray should be a little bit more.
You also need a couple more weeks to tell this story, obviously. This is a fairly
complex, emotional story. Yeah, you need to tell this over a few weeks, and you needed to. I mean, she's doing the scenery chewing villain thing, as opposed to the,
I'm going to make you wait, like
I'm
the
going
Black
to
Witch.
I'm going to decimate you. You know that kind. Yeah, I as opposed to the more in control. This was my plan all along, and I want this belt, and I had to use you, and your star power, and your beauty, and all these other things that these people like out here, to get you comfortable so then I could stab you in the back.
I mean, even if you just got to kind of a bitter
core. It's not personal. You're a nice kid. Whatever. You know,
something,
These people
were never going to accept me as the face of NXT, and I knew they'd love you, but I also knew that I could beat you at any point.
Yes.
You're just a placeholder for me, and now I've come to take what's mine.
You know, I had to hide my ambition until there was a moment that showed itself. And it showed itself finally here, and then, you know, you play the video, and then boom, you know. Yeah, it's a story that they chose not to tell.
Right, and they rushed to the big payoff scene in the story that they didn't tell. And then we got to our main event, which was Mark Andrews versus Cassius Ohno, and you're right, this was a very good match. I really enjoyed. Cassius Ohno is really interesting. He has a cool, well-rounded style. There are certain things that I wish he could still do that he can't do anymore, which is a shame, because he's got such a good wrestling mind on his shoulders.
I saw this match before, kind of. Mark Andrews and Chris Hero at Battle of Los Angeles 2016, and I got those vibes again. Mark Andrews tells a great David and Goliath story.
Yes, he does.
I think. And it was nice to see him get this kind of win. You know, it was strong enough of a win to make it legitimate. It wasn't just a.
I think,
you know,
commentary blew the call at the end.
I do too.
Yes,
I do too.
Because
they didn't put over strong enough.
They didn't put over the fact that Ohno was. They brought up that he could have gotten the win, but they didn't put over that he was going for a tombstone pile driver. Which is sort of like, you just put it over as a disrespect to The Undertaker. Not that it has to be paid off or anything, but the whole idea is that Ohno is a wrestling genius. I've also noticed that he's changed his entrance gear a little bit to look like the genius's entrance gear. I don't know if you noticed this.
Chris Hero's. Cassius Ohno's gear is something that, I want to go on a podcast for fun and discuss, because I want to go with him. I want to interview him and go, okay, where did all these come from? What did your sports fandom come from? I'm interested in that backstory, because I know the teams that he's rooting for, that he's homaging to. I just want to know why. I think that'd be the most fun. I think it should do that on the network. Give me a rundown of all his different colors of gear and why he likes all these teams, because he didn't answer it for me at PWG when I asked him because he was busy, you know, selling merch and stuff. But I'm dying to know that. I thought the team should have put over that this was a really big deal as opposed
yes,
to
that's important.
As opposed to just a win. Like not they don't have to go hyperbolic of this is the biggest upset in the history of NXT UK. But they do, but I'd follow this up with another big win for Mark Andrews if they're building to something. I would put him up against maybe a Coffee Brother to win, something like that.
Oh, that
somebody
would be interesting
of that
to
status.
Have him beat Wolfgang.
Yeah, Wolfgang.
Yeah.
I'd go with that. Yeah.
Him beat Mark, because they're continuing that Mark story. I thought they did a good job with the cutscene with Gallus, too.
Oh, yeah, I did, too. But overall, in terms of Mark Andrews, I think people look at him and the smaller guys, and you know, they look at him, they look at Ligero, they look at Flash Morgan Webster, and they go, small guy, probably going to lose. And I think we need to get rid of that somehow.
Yes, I agree. It's tricky, but yeah, I think, you know, what it has to be is you got to put over the small guy's mind that the guy's got a really good strategy and also the superior skills. But part of that's also then limiting who's doing a shooting star press and who's doing this and that, because if everyone's doing those moves, then.
And not just say it, because that's the problem. They do that. They do that on commentary. Oh, Rey Mysterio can use his quickness to beat the bigger man. All right. they bring it up as a fact, but they don't really put it over.
Oh, man, speaking about not putting over ideas on commentary, Beth Phoenix, not the best week for old Beth on the mic here on NXT US.
She just shouts things. It's like there'll be like some form of high drama on the screen, and Nigel and Mara will be saying, you know, will be telling this story, and then all of a sudden Beth will have to shout something, and you're just like, he really needs to do something right now to help counter this. Okay. Nice job out of you. And I don't want to make this a sexist thing. I just don't think she...
I mean...
She's not better than Percy at Percy's worst.
The issue, you know, here is Nigel tries to pass her the ball at various points,
yeah,
and she blows the pass.
Yeah, like, it's funny because a lot of chatter has been happening this week with the New Japan English commentary and Chris Charlton. I think Chris Charlton has a Beth Phoenix problem the other way. Chris Charlton tries to get in there and say something, and it kind of throws off the rhythm, as opposed to somebody throwing to him for context. Here, you throw to Beth Phoenix for context, and I think she just has a list of things she's supposed to get over. And so she just picks from the list. And so she screams it out. It's like, on her list, it's like, all right, shoulder, uses submission moves. Da-da-da. Okay, I'll pick D, and I'll just say that. And everybody's
he's
like,
really grinding him down, Nigel. Oh. Okay.
Wow, really? Because I can see that. Thanks. You know, yeah. No, that's yeah, I think it's kind of a, yeah, it's just they haven't found out how to use what she brings to the broadcast.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They put her in a slot, and they go, here's your slot. Here's your job. Nigel's the color guy.
Let me put this out here, Jeff.
Maro's the play-by-play guy. You're the emotion of this, and because everything she says is emotional.
Let me put this
out
here.
If you notice.
Is the real intrigue Shayna Baszler versus Beth Phoenix? Shayna's greatest challenge? The most powerful person she's ever gone
no.
against? No?
No. No, because they wouldn't put that on an NXT show, I don't think. I think Beth Phoenix, if she's going to come back, she would do main roster programs, which she did. And I think that's her thing. I don't think there's... No, I think they want her to be a broadcaster because they like the press release of, look, we have women on our play on our sports announcing team. Looks how progressive we are. It's corporate virtue signaling. So we have Renee on Raw, we have Beth on NXT. Look how great we are. You know, it's no, they're not leading to. I wouldn't mind that program. I just don't think that's because that's what they kind of did with Mickie James and Asuka. where they brought in Mickey James for the last Toronto show.
Right, right. It's that's what I'm saying. It's not that foreign of a concept, and I also it more as, is the real intrigue that versus this commentary experiment, which is not going well?
No, because I think they thought she did a good job on Mae Young, and I don't agree with them.
Yeah. I like the Arturo Huiz repackage. I think he looks very formidable.
He is somebody I did not bring up on the Patreon thing, but he was on this Evolve show, too. I think he is great. I do. I love...
This was a fun match.
It's a fun match, but look, he's not going to do... He's not going to do indie style... He's not going to be Will Ospreay in there. But you know he can kick your butt if you had to. So
it's stiff. It's physical.
Physical. It's what I like.
Yeah, this is what I like, too.
I want to give him a manager to speak for him, even though they don't... Put Stokely on this guy every time he's out on TV, and he's a killer.
Stokely managing this guy, and like this is the beginning of a feud with Matt Riddle.
Yes. Yes, that's
because I liked this match, and this could have went longer for all I care. Like, that was a good match.
I think Huas has, he has great potential in terms of just being, he's Steve Blackman, but not in the WWF. Steve Blackman in like a territory in 1985, where you put a Gary Hart with him, and you just know he's going to be stiff as hell. And he's going to be a nice challenge for either your mid-card title guy or your heavyweight title guy on a B pay-per-view. That's the kind of potential I see in him. I love this Riddle match. I think Matt Riddle's a guy I'd put against Brock tomorrow if I could. And they're two mixed martial arts guys, so they know how to do this for real, so you can fake it. That's the problem with tough people in wrestling. If you don't know how to really fight, then you can't really make it look real when you're trying to fake it.
Yeah, there's a way that Huiz spaces himself between his opponent that is clearly different from the way the people who have only ever been WWE performers space themselves out, and the ones who've only been trained in the performance center. It's something that like they'd actually try to iron out of Huiz if he made it onto the main roster, and I don't want that to happen.
Oh, and they'd look at him. He probably doesn't speak good English, or he speaks with an accent. We'll put him with Zelina Vega.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. Almost needs a tag team partner. Here he is, Arturo Huiz.
Oh no, they put back together that Tenara Conti stable and make Tenara go out there with him.
So we have the Street Profits backstage doing street talk. I do not like these tweaks to the Street Profits character. I am not feeling this, fam.
I'm the same.
I'm interested in the Kyle O'Reilly-Bobby Fish match, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
We had cell phone footage. Let me try this again. We had cell phone footage of Mia Yim assaulting Shayna Baszler in the parking lot. This was interesting. Interesting tweak to the Mia Yim character.
I've already kind of gone over that. I haven't been the biggest fan of this iteration of the Mia Yim character. I liked friendly Mia Yim. I did. I liked happy Mia Yim. I understand, you know, the Blasian baddie thing. It's hard. It's weird because she's not quite a good guy, but at the same time, she's not the baddest person on the planet, and next to Shayna. So it's kind of weird because you know Shayna could probably kill this woman, because we've seen it already a few times. I get that Mia's trying to up her game here, but it's almost like making the Io Shirai move when she attacked Candace.
Yeah, when you slam someone in a car door,
toughening people.
Yeah, even if they're a really bad person, pretty substantial.
What did Shayna do to deserve this beforehand, other than be a bull?
Yeah, she's a jerk. She's a jerk. Oh, she's totally a jerk, but this is a competitive sport where you talk a lot of trash all the time, in part to get into your opponent's heads. You may feel that way, but there's a clear incentive structure to talk a lot of trash to get into your opponent's head. It's not okay
if she had run her through a window or something, before, like 3 weeks
ago. Or if Shayna had tried to jump Mia Yim And Mia Yim, got the upper hand on Shayna and started slamming Shayna in the car door, going, "You want to taste your own medicine? Here's a taste of your own medicine. I can do this just as good as you can." Okay, that's cool. That's even, you know, on the verge of bad acidness. But this is kind of heelish, to be honest.
Earned bad acidness. You know, if somebody attacks you, you have every right to be a badass against them. And you know, if you were the quote unquote baby face in this. In this thing, if you just go out and I mean,
oh, so you're walking to your car.
All of a sudden, you know, it's like, okay, what did Mia? Why is Mia this mad? That's the other thing is, why is she this mad at Shayna?
And the justification is going to be so that she can get a title shot, but this is not an okay way to go about getting a title shot. So I thought this was very unconstructive.
What did you think of the Tyler Breeze video?
That was hot garbage. I thought that was absolutely horrible. It was poorly scripted and poorly acted.
I thought it was kind of poorly acted, but I did. It was weird. I liked the line, "Hey, didn't you used to be Buddy Murphy?"
That was okay, but everyone acted horrible in that. And the dialogue was just really, really stiff and stiffly delivered.
Here was my problem is that Tyler Breeze is a bigger guy than you'd think. And standing next to Jackson Riker eye to eye, you're like, oh, that kind of kills Jackson's aura a little bit, I thought.
Yeah, that's one of the problems I have with this scene. I apparently thought much less.
You didn't like the comedy.
I didn't find the comedy to be comedy. I mean, the "didn't you used to be Buddy Murphy" line was funny, but it didn't make up for all of the weirdness and the goofiness of the Forgotten Sons. They felt like goofballs, and I thought the whole point was to try to make them seem more legitimate, so I'm confused with what we're doing with these guys.
No, I would agree there. I think I was concentrating more on Breeze's performance, because I did like the aside, "I'm a man, I have a beard."
Yes, that was funny. I thought that line was funny.
He's the scared smart aleck in the action movie or whatever. Yeah, or in the horror movie when it's, you know, he's the wisecracking guy who's about to get his butt kicked. So I kind of liked it on that level. But no, yeah, I think your criticisms are valid.
What do you think about Bronson Reed and Dexter Loomis?
All right.
What do you think about Dexter Loomis?
Well, the aforementioned Stokely Hathaway is aligned with, I'm going to call him Jonah Rock. What does Bronson?
Yes.
In all these videos and things, so I thought he should have probably been out there from the get-go. Sam Shaw is one of the... I call him Sam...
I still think of Dexter him Loomis, as Sam Shaw as well.
Yeah, Dexter Loomis is the former Sam Shaw from NWA and TNA. He's a guy that looks like a million bucks. He's a guy that has a great presence when he comes out. He's a guy that is an okay wrestler.
He can do a
That's
few things.
That's my issue. He can do a few things. Emphasis on few.
Yes, he has that flip
I love
out of the
him.
Ring. That was cool.
That was great. I love him as a presence. He took 80% of this match and then lost.
Yeah.
Who were we trying to introduce here? That's my question, because I was like...
I thought this was a Dexter Loomis match because he got the huge entrance that was really impactful. Bronson Reed, no knock on the guy, he just doesn't have the oomph that Dexter Loomis has. But then you go back to the bracket, and this is why they can't show the bracket before the match, because then you see Cameron Grimes on the other side of the bracket. So they had to do this. This is poorly thought out.
Sam Shaw is a sports entertainment character in a wrestling tournament right now, because his character should be, in my opinion, he should be a throwback to the old... There's a couple characters who have been like this. The Secret Service Jack Victory in NWA. The Big Boss Man on his second run through when he was with the corporation. He's a bodyguard character.
Anyone who can do that flip out of the ring, if you just get that over with the crowd, that he has this one powerful submission move and he can also just sneak up on you.
With the sleeves and stuff, I would give him a Eastern Promises type character. Make him a badass assassin type. The blue jeans threw me off a bit. I gotta admit, him wrestling, because you know what he with the haircut and the blue jeans, he came off to me like Orange Cassidy.
I thought you were gonna say Orange Cassidy. It did occur to me while I was watching the match as well.
Yeah, I'm watching this. I'm going, Man, he's angry Orange Cassidy right now.
Been watching Stranger Things, and he's weird now. He went upside down, and then
I was shocked by the story of this match because I'm like, you're gonna put Dexter. I didn't know the spoiler on this one, so I thought, okay, Loomis is having most of the offense. They're gonna have a comeback by Bronson. He's gonna do a bunch of power stuff, and then eventually Loomis is gonna pull out. But no, it's Loomis dominates, and then, you know, Bronson hits a couple of moves and beats him. I was just like, that's an interesting way to introduce a guy as... Here's the other part. The video didn't fit.
Yes.
He's talking about Australian strong styling. Comes out and gives his ass kicked for
80%
of the match.
Even better is that production forgot to edit in the Dexter Lubis video as well. And Moro tried to cover that up by going, it looks like our production team was just as freaked out by Dexter Lubis' intro as we were.
I wonder if they did one.
I think they did do one.
Okay. I'm just wondering if they had just forgotten to do one.
This is where they forgot to put in the one that they did.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have had an intro for Sam. Although I think his video should have just been him staring at the camera. And then that's it.
That would have been very funny. I'm Dexter Lubis. Like, and then
you have Kathy Kelly asking questions. Do you want to say anything?
I'm Dexter Lubis.
Tell us about yourselves. Tell us about where you came from. Why are you wearing the gloves? He's just doing that deadpan into the thing. I love his look. I think there's a place for him. I don't think he's a work rate machine, but I don't think you have to be a work rate machine in professional wrestling if you have the proper role. I'd put him on the main roster tomorrow as a bodyguard to somebody, but that's me.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. It's only one match.
He's a little older though. That's the problem. He's older and he's in NXT. And NXT is work rate geek central. And I'm not saying geek as a derogatory thing. I'm saying it as a... No, I'm not, because I love all those guys. It's just sometimes they get an idea of what a guy should be, and they start crapping on him before he gets a chance to improve. And it's one of those things where it's like... I think they're going to be very hard on him at the NXT arena. Let's put it that way.
Then we had Kushida defeating Apollo Crews. Your thoughts on Kushida versus Apollo Crews?
It was the most fun I've had watching an Apollo Crews match since probably forever.
That is very much the truth, and he certainly felt rejuvenated. It made me think that Apollo might be back to help out Tyler Breeze, and that's why we kind of wrapped up this.
It's a good possibility.
Yeah.
I am still shocked at how badly they blew Apollo Crews. Because if you watch I want to say Breaking Ground. It might be Proving Ground, but whatever that video was, behind the scenes at NXT, where they were building up Baron Corbin.
Yeah,
and they're talking about Tito or not Tio. What's his name? The guy that Rob always liked.
Tino Sabatelli.
Tino Sabatelli. Apollo Crews was the star of that show.
Right,
his
right,
backstory,
right.
his charisma, his visit with his sister. Everything on that was great. He has this natural charisma. They bring him onto the NXT show. He has a great debut against Tyler Breeze, and he has these great matches, and then they start to beat him a bit, and then they bring him up to the main roster in, I believe it was Dallas, on the Raw after WrestleMania. And all he is, and all Vince sees him as is, I can't say it without getting in real trouble, but let's put it this way. He's a nice guy with a nice personality. And that's all they did with him. He has this big, look at his smile. Look at his energy. And they didn't do anything with him as the wrestler. They didn't do anything with the Uha Nation that was on the indies. That was just an absolute monster who could do all these flips and stuff. He got into the WWE pattern.
And they got rid of the Apollo Nation. They stripped everything that made this guy a success on the indies and reduced him down to what you just said. And
he became Mr. Happy to be there.
Yes,
I'm happy.
Right.
Look at me. I'm going to smile. Look at his smile. Look at his.
This guy
so
loves performing for the fans.
He loves to entertain. And you're just like, oh, my God. that's the kiss of death.
And there is just...
Why are you making those weird noises on the podcast, Jeff? Well, because sometimes you get frustrated and you can't think of what to say. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... I could do this whole show by myself, Chris.
I mean, it's fine. This new co-host you have is... interesting.
Don't make fun of me. I like wrestling.
It's true. Okay, no, he's dialed into the product. It's great. Honestly, some of the takes have been pretty good. But so then we had, I liked this little twist with the Adam Cole feud, where Adam Cole thinks that he's going to embarrass Trey Tucker, and Trey and Johnny have a twist on
Adam
Cole.
Is it Trey
or Twan? Oh, it's Twan. My bad. I don't know where I got Trey from.
Let me come in here for a second.
Yes.
What a thrill it must have been for this kid.
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Who is probably never going to get a whiff of the WWE. I could not contain myself. Like, man, that is so awesome.
To even
and the way they set this up was
awesome.
Shot. Yeah, I thought this entire thing was great. I was happy for the kid. I thought, you know, I mean, his one line wasn't the most, I mean, it's hard the first time you speak into a microphone to sound like you have, I mean, to really.
You don't feel comfortable the first, I'd say, like 50 times you're really speaking into a microphone.
Yeah, you don't put the mic to your mouth enough. You're not used to it reverberating around a full arena.
It's weird hearing your own voice through speakers.
Yeah, it was a little weak. But I liked his presence, and I liked that they gave that kid that's his 15 minutes of fame if he never does anything in wrestling ever again. So I thought that was just great.
Yeah, he was involved in a main event angle. So,
and I'm not a sentimental guy, which is so weird that I was just smiling and going, that's really cool for that kid.
No, I thought they did the whole thing really well, and I'm excited to see Johnny versus Adam Cole. I feel like, you know, Adam's not going to be giving the belt back, but this is a good way to set this up and make Johnny feel like he's really in the chase.
Chris, I love everything about this angle. I don't want to see Adam and Johnny again.
Yep, me neither. Which this is the why I'm fine, because I think this is it.
This is the Gargano story, though. We never get past him, and he's great. I love Johnny Gargano. I rave about him after every takeover. But this is every takeover program with Johnny Gargano, where he never really gets to move on until somebody gets injured or called up. And it's like, oh. And I guess it's going to be like a Three Faces of Fear match.
What do you mean?
Well, because they're talking about the third time, and I guess, I'm guessing it's going to have something to do with the number three. Because
oh,
the
you're
first
saying
one
like
was
the
like,
three stages of hell.
Three stages of hell, three, I guess
you were talking about the White Castle of Doom match.
No. I'm talking three matches, three different stipulations.
So, yeah, I could see something like that. Three stages of hell, maybe. But, yes, yeah. I think this is also third and final time as well.
I guess so, but what do you do with Gargano when he loses? Because I don't think he's going up
you
until
keep
Ciampa
Matt
comes
Riddle
back.
In an infinity holding pattern in the
I
lower
agree.
Card.
There's a bunch of people. You need. Keith Lee is
right
making some noise. Although
I love Johnny, but he's jamming the lane for these other guys, and it's time for Johnny to do other things.
It's time to give him a promotion.
Right. And let Adam Cole sit at the top as the undisputed era champion. I mean, I don't want him to go back and become the North American champion again.
No, you've already cooled him down. You've already turned him heel. You've already put him on the top of the mountain.
And they blew the heel turn. They rushed the heel turn.
And they yes, they blew the heel turn. They blew the babyface turn after the heel turn for a while. They got it correct.
So now they're out of steam, though. Like this character, they've squeezed all of the juice out of this lemon. It's been a fun ride, and he's had a lot of great matches along the way. But because they rushed that heel turn and because they rushed that babyface turn, there's just not enough rope left in the line anymore.
If you don't think he has a place on the main roster, and I think he has a place on the main roster.
Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations. Limited time only. Plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.